93 KNVA. That's Barley, the Birds of Chicago tune by Liz Wright from her new album, Grace. Really a fine new album she's got as well. Big Stars Third Live with Skylar Gudas covering Big Stars Third, 13, of course. Robert Plant got us started out. We heard from Patti Sciolfa with Rose from her 23rd Street Lullaby disc. And some nice doo-woppy stuff from Aaron Neville in there, too. Little bitty pretty one. It is 8:27 and happy, happy Friday. Thanks so much for tuning in. It is the Morning Line program. I'm Danny Preston.
And I'm Frank Scheiflick. You know, we love to keep you in tune with our community. And so if you've got nonprofit announcements or PSAs, public service announcements, or event announcements, send them to feedback@knba.org. We've got a great guest in the studio today, the curator of Alaska History and Culture at the Anchorage Museum at Rasmussen Center, Aaron Leggett.
Aaron, good morning to you.
Good morning to you guys.
Haven't seen you for a while. Looking good.
Oh, thank you.
You've been busy, very busy, of course, at the museum with all the expansion that's going on. And you've got lots of stuff happening in the gallery itself.
Yeah, that's correct. I'm the curator, or one of the curators, for the Alaska, used to be called the Alaska History Gallery. We're now calling it the Alaska Exhibition. And that's the gallery on the second floor of the museum that's been, this way I was a kid. It was completed in 1986. So I grew up literally with the Alaska History Gallery, and it's exciting to be able to reimagine it and reshape it.
You are obviously known, you know, locally, and well, not just locally, internationally as a historian too, particularly of the Dena'ina Athabascan people. So this has got to be really exciting for you to be hooked up with a lot of the new things that are happening at the museum.
Oh, it's amazing. Yes, I couldn't ask for a better job, and I'm really excited to be at the museum and to be able to work on so many different exciting projects.
Talk about some of the things that are on exhibit there now that folks should know about.
Right now we are getting ready to put in an exhibition with Ray Troll, famous graphic designer. It's involving a paleontological interests of his, fossils, those kinds of things. He's worked a lot with a lot of natural history museums outside of Alaska, but there hasn't been one here in Alaska, as far as I know. So we're really excited about that. We're just about to wrap up our what's called the sesquicentennial exhibition, Polar Bear Garden. It looks at the 150 years of shared connections between Alaska and Russia. That's been on display.
Because we can see it from our bedroom, from our backyard or whatever.
We actually deal with that in the exhibition. And believe it or not, there are places in Alaska where you can actually see Russia, like on Little Diomede or from Wales on a good clear day. You know, that exhibition's pretty exciting because we've been able to borrow, for example, the canceled check from the U.S. Treasury. It's now at the National Archives, the $7.2 million
check. That we paid.
Yeah, we paid. And
your tax dollars at work.
Yeah, there you go. So a lot of programming around different exhibitions. Yeah, and then obviously our expansion and our new Alaska Gallery.
You know, one thing that's always fascinated me is just thoughts which are sort of abstract now in the 21st century, but speaking of the ties between our cross-strait cultures, anything devoted to Beringia at the that particular exhibition?
In the Alaska Gallery?
Yeah.
We discussed that quite a bit, and actually we made a conscious decision not to do that. And the reason being is that this exhibition is going to be up for 20 to 30 years, and it seems like almost every month there's some new discovery, some recontextualizing, and we were really afraid that whatever we put up would quickly become outdated about the, you know, the peopling of Alaska. So we made a decision not to do it. We had a lot of discussion about whether we should do it, but ultimately it was decided that because of all these new finds and the archaeology and global climate change and, you know, the melting of the permafrost, And, you know, all these fines that are happening really kind of led us to say, let's not specifically deal with that. Now, that's not to say someday we might not do an exhibition with, you know, recent discoveries and the history. But yeah.
It's 8:32 if you are just tuning in. Danny Preston along with Frank Chytluk, and it's the Morning Line program, and our guest this morning is Aaron Leggett. Aaron, of course, is the curator of Alaska History and Culture at the Anchorage Museum that's got it's got, of course, the History Gallery, but lots of other expansion going on there, too. And Aaron, you used a word that that is so appropriate. You used the word contextualizing. And we think of in terms of life in Alaska, both nature and culture having so many dynamic characteristics. So it makes a lot of sense. This exhibition is going to be there for 30 years, and so it's going to be ever evolving. Do you have some sort of vision for what that's going to look like?
Well, I think that, you know, the overall theme of the entire exhibition is really there's one central question, and that is, how have people shaped the landscape that we call Alaska today, you know? And also the second part of that question is, so how have people affected the landscape, but also how has the landscape affected people? In other words, how has it inspired people, caused people to think about it, issues? Although the gallery has a chronological theme or chronological sequence, it's thematic. So, for example, for the section two of the exhibition dealing with Alaska Native people, it's about Alaska and its resources. Alaska and adaptation. How have people adapted to their landscapes and used the resources from their particular environments? You know, when most people think of Alaska Native people, typically the image that pops into people's mind are people of the far north, you know, living in this desolate landscape eking out a survival, relying on driftwood. And some of those things are true, but you could also say that if you look at, like, southeast Alaska, where you have temperate rainforests, or where my people are in Cook Inlet, you know, we have boreal forests and the ocean. So for that section dealing with Alaska Native people, instead of having a case dedicated to here's the Aleuts or Unangah, here's the Athabascans, here's the Tlingit, which is typically how it's done, instead we've looked at what does it look like to be a people that only have driftwood or whalebone? What does it look like to only, to utilize birch and spruce? Or what does it look like to use cedar? So what we're trying to do in the gallery is show that a lot of these themes of adaptation, resources, wilderness, are things that are not only rooted in the past, but are still very relevant to today and questions that we have, like, should we protect quote-unquote unspoiled wilderness, or should we develop it? These are issues that go on and have been going on for quite some time.
And it's interesting that that there's sort of a look with a environmental orientation towards the exhibit rather than just a geographical orientation. And you mentioned, you know, within particular environments, because, you know, as anybody who's worked inside indigenous cultures, specifically Alaskan, knows that there's so much diversity in and among our Alaskan people, and there's no real one-size-fits-all. So it's great to have somewhere where you can compare and contrast and learn about our neighbors, and I think that's really important.
Yeah, to be able to see that, and then also when we started on the gallery, you know, at the museum we're also home to the Arctic Studies Center, and it's wonderful exhibition with the objects on long-term loan from the Smithsonian's NMNH and NMAI. I didn't want to try to duplicate that. And so instead of trying to recreate that in some form, which I could never do, I want people to see the Smithsonian, the Arctic Studies Center, and go through the Alaska Gallery to get a sense about a much more nuanced idea of the diversity of landscape and people and adaptation and history and culture, but not just in the past, but also taking it forward through up into the 20th century, dealing with like things like the Aleut evacuation or the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. In the exhibition, we've had it on display for quite a number of years, but still, I think we're drawing a lot more attention to it. For example, we have Howard Rock's typewriter that he used to type up the editorials and a lot of the work done for the Tundra Times. In fact, we're featuring that in several spots that'll soon be airing on television.
Okay, history buffs, it's a don't miss, right?
Absolutely. If you understand, what it is, a simple manual typewriter. If you know that it belonged to Howard Rock and the significance of the Tundra Times, 50 years ago. There was no KNBA. There was no Alaska Federation of Natives. Most villages only, if they were lucky, had one telephone. So it was kind of a revelation when the Tundra Times came about that, an Inupiat in Barrow or the Inupiat of Barrow could learn that a lot of the same issues they were facing were similar to Tlingits and Ketchikan. I mean, we're a huge state. And that's one of the other things that we really want to highlight that, if we think about the landmass that we call Alaska, we're more than just a state. We're a region, essentially. We represent one-third the size of the entire continental United States. What does that really mean? It's almost like trying to do an exhibition about the West or the Northwest or the Midwest. It's not just a state. It's an area. It's a region. And, of course, with all the geographic diversity, it can become a challenge, but it's also pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's sort of get into the thing where you're lumping Salish indigenous people of Puget Sound down with Cajun folks at the other end of the continent.
Yeah. The Caddo or something, in the swamps of Louisiana or the Dene or Navajo of the Southwest. I mean, there are certainly a lot of similarities spiritually, belief systems, values, those kinds of things, but environmentally they can be very different.
And it's interesting that you mentioned the Navajo too, and we're real close to wrapping up here too, but there's that really great connection with Navajo and folks in the American Southwest with that Athabascan connection with folks in Alaska here too. And is that touched upon at all in the museum?
Not particularly. Maybe a little bit of a mention in the Arctic Study Center and some of the text. We tend to stick more in Alaska. We don't really get into the massive size of the Dene people. In fact, the Dene people inhabit the largest geographic spread of any language family in the world.
Wow.
A traditional territory.
Uh-huh.
We don't really get into that, but, maybe there is, that's an idea for another day, and I'll file that.
You're going to be around for 30 years. What the heck?
Yeah, exactly.
All righty. As we get set to wrap up here, anything else? Frank, do you have anything you wanted to add?
I was wondering, we're talking about this exhibit and how it's changed after this 30-year installation. And as things have changed with people and social media and the pace of information exchange, is there plans to kind of keep this rotating a certain interval that's a little closer to less than 30 years?
I think that, when we designed the exhibition, especially with regard to the media technology, we tried to keep it pretty much tried and true, but the media stuff, we recognize that probably 10 years down the road that we're going to have to reimagine it. So, what we've tried to do is try to tell a story and pose questions to people. I think that's an important point, too, to make, that museums no longer have to be like the Encyclopedia Britannica, the definitive story of a place. In 1986, for example, there was no Arctic Study Center. There was no Alaska Native Heritage Center. So, you know, I know the dioramas were well loved by people. I loved them as a child, but now you can go to the Alaska Native Heritage Center and actually go inside Sukbiak Chikluak, as opposed to just looking kind of in sort of as a voyeur almost, and meet the descendants of the people of the area. So I think that that's a large change, that we're not trying to be as authoritative. What we're trying to do is pose questions to people that they can think about and really consider and do more research about, and go to different places, or go to the Arctic Studies Center, go to the Alaska Native Heritage Center, so on and so forth. The one thing also that I did want to mention is that the everything is going to open up to the public on the 15th of September.
Okay, we'll look forward to that 15th of September. And as the flyer from the museum says, come to know the true North at the Anchorage Museum through the new Rasmussen Wing and Art of the North Galleries. Our guest has been Aaron Leggett, curator of Alaska History and Culture at the Anchorage Museum. And come back and see us, won't you?
Sure, no problem.
Aaron, thanks so very much. And thank you, Frank. 8:43, just ahead, Old 97s with Brandi Carlile and Benjamin Gibbard.
During the process of revitalizing native languages, it sometimes becomes necessary to create new words, like this word in Ojibwe.
Wejiwanakejig is the Green Bay Packers, which is derived from Ojiwanake. He or she makes a meat pack. And then Wejiwanakejig is the meat packers.
New native language words on the next Native America Calling.
The Cook Inlet Tribal Council Ernie Turner Center Village of Care Residential Program provides an extended family environment in which adult men and women seeking sobriety work together to support recovery through cooperation and teamwork. Alaska Native culture and values are at the core of the program, and participants gain valuable skills for independent living. Learn more about the Ernie Turner Center at citci.org/recovery or call 907-550-2400.